What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. I got a great show for you today. We're doing another deal breakdown. I'm actually loving these. I'm really enjoying them. I dove into a ton of details on this one. They were poised to make a lot of money on this house, but we broke down all the numbers. We showed like some catastrophe that happened, some issues, a ton of lessons learned. There was an escrow holdback tip that I think is a gold mine in here. So make sure that you listen to this entire thing because it's full of like tips, tricks, strategies, so you can make the most money on your flips. And as a wholesaler, if you understand this stuff, you'll understand how the rehabbers and flippers are thinking. And that's, you need to know their numbers. You need to understand that so you can make sure that you find them the best deals so you can make the most money possible. I hope you guys enjoy this one.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity. And that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
What's going on? I've got a great show today. We're going through these deal breakdowns, and I've really been enjoying myself. I hope you've been enjoying it. If you have been enjoying it, let me know. Shoot me an email, info@sevenfigureflipping.com. Respond to the email that you got. Let me know in the YouTube comments, wherever you're watching this. If you want more of these, if there's something else that you're looking for or why you came here or how we can help. But I'm enjoying these deal breakdowns because every single one of them is different. And there's little tips and tricks and coaching and things that come up. There's just gold mine of advice that I've seen over the past few weeks of doing this. So I got another one today, and it's from Florida. It's a deal from Florida, and we have a couple that's in our program right now that have done some really cool things, and they're going to talk through one of their deals. So today I have Nick and Tiffany Winterodnik on the show. And I cannot spell that, but I think I just said it right. How'd I do?
You did, Bill. Good job.
You did great.
Yay! I only legitimately had to practice like seven or eight times before I said it on the air. So I did okay?
You did. You're coachable. Yep.
I like to think that that's a success trait, is being coachable. Well, it's nice to have you guys. We spent quite a bit of time together, either on like virtual calls or in person. Just saw you guys when I was down in Florida. It was really awesome. So it's nice to see you again, and I'm excited to talk to you guys today. Maybe you can share a little bit of background of who you are and a little bit of that before we go.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
I guess
I'm going to take this one. So, yep, Nick and Tiffany will have been married 20 years in September.
For real?
Mm-hmm. Big milestone coming
20
up.
20 years? You guys get married when you're like 10?
Almost.
Yeah, just about.
Wow, yeah. 20 years. And congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's gone fast. It's been awesome. It's been a fun ride. We balance each other out really well. And so we've had to learn to use that flipping, and I'm sure we'll get to talk about that later, using our strengths for that. But we're in Florida now. We've been in Florida almost 3 years. We were in Colorado before that. We started real estate investing in 2020. We had talked about doing something with our money, like in 2019, didn't really know what. And a friend of mine started buying long-term buy and holds in Memphis, and he lived in Colorado. And we're like, oh, if he can do it, maybe we can do it. He introduced us to Bigger Pockets, and we started reading and kind of pouring into that. We didn't buy anything in Memphis. They kept falling through. But we bought an Airbnb in Destin as our first investment. Use it as a winter getaway. And then COVID happened. So we didn't know if that would be the best or worst investment of our life, buying it as the world was shutting down. It turned out to be a great investment. But we visited Florida so much, we loved it. So we didn't move to Destin. The panhandle was a little small for us, but that's how we ended up in Tampa. Cashed out our money in Colorado because we wanted to do some other investing. And so we bought a couple of duplexes, and then when we got to Florida, realized if we're going to do buy and holds, we're going to burr. We got to learn how to flip, and Tiffany always wanted to flip houses. So we said, well, let's start learning how to flip houses. So we did our first flip in September of 21.
22.
We did our first flip.
And our duplexes are in Indianapolis. I don't know if you said that or not.
Why'd you want to flip, Tiffany?
That's a good question. Maybe I think I just like the transformation, you know, the before and after part of it is what I liked. And I also, I think it was more of an active investment than necessarily just buying a buy and hold and just kind of, you know, waiting long-term.
That's too boring for you. You want more action and activity.
Yeah, I need more stress.
Was it TV shows? Like, how'd you get introduced to it and get excited about it? Like, think about it.
I don't know. I mean, I've always been, I've been told I'm like, instead of the corporate ladder, I've been like a corporate lattice. So I've just never liked working for corporate America or people. And so I think it was just a way to kind of be my own boss and have my own business. So that was, real estate was one way to do that. I mean, I think, I mean, I don't know. I can't say I was a huge HGTV person, even though I get sucked in. I do get sucked into those shows. We did have a friends of ours that started flipping in in Colorado, Megan and Craig Powell. They're in seven figure. And so they came out to visit us and they visited Florida and we got together with them and, you know, they were talking more about flipping. And then I went and bought a book and 2 months later we bought a flip. So it was just kind of like, oh gosh.
It wasn't yours, Bill. Sorry.
It's okay.
I don't remember I have it over on the shelf over there, but I don't quite remember the name of the book. But it basically.
I only ask because it sounded like it might have been impactful in the story. So sometimes, like when you unpack the story, you can see a line. And there's a lot of people that are listening right now that are like, I want to do the same thing. I just don't know like what the catalyst is. So it's interesting when you kind of unpack that, you see all these little things that line up that kind of like nudged you a little bit in the direction to finally break. Like something has to break for you to go, all right, fine, I'm just going to do this. So Craig and Megan, you guys were like friends with them in Colorado. That's how you got introduced to our group?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I honestly remember like the dinner or lunch we had with them over down by the beach and they were like, oh, we're going to join this mastermind thing. And I'm like, I would never do that. Well, then I don't know, then, you know, bought the book. And I think to me, flipping was a lot scarier than buying a rental. So that was a bigger step for me personally. And, you know, just getting connected locally, going to some of the meetups, before we even bought a flip, making some connections, reading the book, you know, it was a whole bunch of different things. And then finally we bought one in August of 20, like at the end of August, 2022 is when we finally pulled the trigger. And the thing is that I'm like the idea person. I'm a visionary. I'm not as much of an action taker. I just like to come up with ideas. And so, you know, I've had tons of ideas my entire life. So it really was really to actually do it was kind of a big deal. You know, probably we didn't do it the best, didn't make the best decisions for that first one, but we did it. So
did you make money on the first one?
Barely.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
If things could go wrong, they did go wrong.
Yeah.
Which.
That's not the one we wanted to talk about for this one. Yeah.
I'm just curious because sometimes people do well on the first one and it keeps them going. Sometimes they don't do well on the first one. They kind of like get discouraged. So I'm just curious. How'd you go from the, I would never do something like that to, we need to join a coaching program or a mastermind.
So it was funny because so 2022, it was in Orlando with Flip Hacking Live. So Megan and Craig invited us to that, obviously easy drive, and invited me to the VIP night and at Universal. Oh,
you got to Harry Potter world.
Yeah. And we had just, got like a stop work order right then. We were just having all these problems with our contractors, and we're going to this Flip Hacking Live thing. And then at the end of the event, you know, Nick was like, I know you want to go, I know you want to join. And, he was kind of the person that pushed us, to do that. And then we signed up and we figured that if anybody's going to help us, it would be the group. And, in the middle of the mess that, you know, we found ourselves in at that time.
Prior to buying that flip, I had just read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And the chapter that really stuck out to me was paying for your education. Like, that was just screaming loud in my head. And so I read that. I'm like, okay, we're going to flip this house. We're going to learn. We're just going to pay for our education. And so on the heels of that, we went to Flip Hacking Live and just getting exposure to the people and hearing people that had just started and where they had been. It was like, okay, you can pay for your education experience, or you can pay for your education in things like a mastermind. And I just saw a lot of value in doing that. So it tied them together really well for me to say, okay, we can learn how to do this quicker, better.
Got it. So just a private event at Harry Potter World at Universal Studios will sway you from a no to a yes. So you drank the butterbeer, I guess. Or like
yeah, exactly.
The Kool-Aid or butterbeer. Cool. Let's talk about the deal. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. So this is a flip that you were buying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So how'd you find it? Like, how did it come about?
So we found this one, and this was our second flip. We call it Buddies, and we can tell you why. But we bought it from a wholesaler. That's how we found this one, and that was our second flip. So
okay, so the first one you like made a bunch of mistakes, it sounds like. If anything could go wrong, it did go wrong. You made a little bit of money. Right after buying it, you kind of joined Seven Figure Runway, and then you got that. Was that one done? Did you finish that one before you bought this one?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, were you on, how'd you get on the wholesalers list? Let's talk about that. Like, what would you recommend to people who are flippers that are working with wholesalers? Like, what was that process like? Give me some tips on that.
So getting on wholesalers list, like this specific wholesaler, I don't quite remember, but I know that a lot of them through Facebook groups will join wholesaler Facebook groups, local groups, and get on their list. Like through Investor Lift, if you go on Investor Lift and just by looking at the listing, they can contact you. So I would contact wholesalers through that list, and then through local meetup groups, I would get on their list. And I think
Investor Lift is a software platform that wholesalers use to dispose of their properties to sell them. Do you have to have a membership, like pay for the software to be able to see them all?
No.
Okay. So as a flippers, you can just see things that are listed on there, and then you can reach out to those wholesalers directly to say, hey, can you add me to your list? Can you send me what you got? Those kind of things.
Correct. Yes.
Cool. That's a good tip. All right. So how many deals did you have to look at before you found this one? Like, were you looking at tons of deals from wholesalers? What was that like?
Yeah, I want to say because of the first one, we, you know, learned a lot from that one and didn't want to make the same mistakes so I feel like I was a little bit more strict with this particular deal. And so just really wanting my numbers to be more solid than the first one. And this particular one, I believe the price, I think the wholesale price started at like $240. And, you know, I was following it for a bit, and then they weren't selling it. So I went and looked at it, and I ended up offering them, I think I offered them $210, and we settled on $215.
They were asking $240. They sent it out. You were watching it. Maybe they sent it out again, or it was still available, and you're like, maybe there's an opportunity here. You went and looked at it and then offered $210. And so you looked at it, even though they were asking $240, you went and looked at it anyway.
I think by that time they had lowered the price to $240. $220. So I kept watching it. Went to go look at it. And I figured, I don't know. And again, that's a little bit newer in our journey. I figured, you know what? I'll show them the interest I have in it. I went there, and then I went to like Kiavi, got the proof of funds, and I sent that to him, and I said, here's my offer. Here's the proof of funds, you know, whatever, $210. And they came back at $215. So.
Got it. Did Nick just write you a note?
I did, because she's missing. So we sold that first flip in January, and we didn't get this one till April.
Oh.
So she made a lot of offers in this 3-month period. I don't know if you remember how many, but we were making a lot of offers, but at very, very conservative prices because we wanted to make sure there was big margin.
Yeah. What can you define a lot of offers?
I don't know. Maybe 10 a week. I mean, that doesn't seem like a whole lot, but I would say.
Well, it doesn't seem like a lot to you now, but it might have seemed like a lot to you then.
Right. So I would say at least 5 to 10, which I mean, I've even been told that's, you know, you should be offering more than that, but that's about.
Last night I spoke to a RIA group and I said, raise your hand. There were 80 people there. I said, raise your hand if you're making more than 10 offers a week. And two people raised their hand in the whole room. And I said, these are the only two people that are going to get deals. the rest of you are going to fail. You're not going to get deals. If you do, it'll be lucky. And they're like, how many should we make? I was like, more than 10, as many as you can. Mm-hmm. Like the only way you get deals is that way. So yeah, in the beginning you think like, cause it's just like, oh my gosh, like what if they say yes? And you send five of them out and you're freaking out. So like doing one or two is a big deal. And then you kind of get, you know, you get more reps, you get kind of numb to it. You send out 20, 30 a week. It's not a big deal. And that's the game, is it's a volume game. Yeah. So, and then you were making really conservative offers. So sometimes it's like conservative, conservative, conservative. So conservative ARV, conservative rehab costs, conservative holding costs. And next thing you know, your offer is so low that it's just like, it's never going to happen. So you got to kind of dial in that conservativeness, if you will, to make sure that you're still competitive. Right. And so that you probably realize that throughout, like looking back now, it's like, oh man, like 3 months, we were just like, now it's an $80,000 profit margin. And if anything happens, it goes down to 40. And so I talked about that on one of the last episodes that I did, is you just, you know, go back to that place of like, we're cool to learn. We're cool to learn for 30 or 40K. So if it ends up at 25 or 30, I mean, or 10 or 15, we're making money to continue to learn. So that's the thing that I think a lot of people forget about. When the first one, they're like, I'm cool to learn. And they make 10K and they're like, oh, that was so painful. And the next time they're like, I have to make 50K. And you go so far to the other side of the pendulum, you don't get a deal for a while. I did that forever. Like I was like, I only will do a deal if I make 50K or more. And I just did zero deals for like 6 months. So
I think that's exactly what happened. It was like kind of some of the fear or issues we had with the first one that I was like, this can't happen again. So you kind of, yeah, swing the pendulum. So
yeah.
We still struggle with that now.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, but I mean, like you're getting better and better and better every time. And every time that something goes wrong, you're learning from it. And I know it can be painful in the time, but eventually you're going to get to that place of like, nothing can hurt you. Like you just get it dialed in and you have a $20,000 deal, you have a $60,000 deal, and it just, you just keep going. And so the thing that I think that everybody can glean from this and like learn from is to like find that middle ground in what you're doing. So if you had, you know, a really big deal, like in my case, I made 45K and I was like, oh, why would I make 25,000? And so I was only looking for like 45K or more, or 50K or more. And just everything was getting shot down. Like my numbers were so far off. It was just like disrespectful, to the point that it was actually disrespectful. Not like disrespectful to the point that you're running a business and you have to make money. And sometimes people get offended by the offer. This is like so low that it was like, if they lower the price by 30K on the MLS, they'll get, you know, 10 offers that are higher than mine. So, and then if you don't make money or you make a little amount of money, don't swing it so far that it also has to be a huge profit. So like, don't forget about how you felt before you started that first one and take the lessons that you learned from it and get a little bit better. So, okay, cool. So you made an offer 210, they took it at 215. When you looked at this property, what did you think the ARV was going to be? So don't tell me what you actually sold it for. I want to like get there. So I want to know what you thought it was going to be, and then same with the rehab costs. We're going to go down that road. Okay. So what did you think the ARV was going to be when you bought it?
So because I was being very conservative, I thought it was going to be 365.
365K. So that was the anticipated ARV. And then how much did you think the rehab cost was going to be on it?
I figure about 60.
60K. And then, okay. So 215, to 60K, 275. So we got a $90,000 margin in there, not including sales costs, holding costs, all that stuff. How long did you think the rehab was going to take? How long did you project and plan for it to take?
We usually do 4 to 6 months is what we...
Okay, is it 4 months or is it 6 months?
What rehab or the whole project?
Well, the whole project. Yeah, the
hold. What did you think the hold time was going to be on this project?
We always like hope for 4, but plan for 6-ish.
Okay, so you thought 6 months. And this was when?
We closed in April.
April 23.
Yeah, 2023. And we sold it in September. We actually closed in September.
Okay, April. Wait, what? You mean you sold it in September?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, sold it.
Okay. In September. So April 2023. The rates were higher. They were high then, right? April 2023. Like they were.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they were up. It was like the end of 2022, I think, like August, September 2022 or something. So that was starting to change. Okay, cool. So April 2023. All right. So you bought it for 215. How did you get the money for it?
Hard money. We did hard money, and that happened to be our first deal that we got. We used private money as well.
Okay. So use hard money and private money for it. Use both.
Yes.
Okay. So what'd you do? You did what kind of hard money loan was it?
We did a hard money loan with Kiabi. So we did.
Did you have 100% or not? You got 90% purchase.
90%.
Okay. 90% of the purchase price. So in our program, we have a deal with them where we get 100% of the purchase price, 100% of rehab, but you have to have done 5 transactions the last 2 years. So 5 flips in the last 2 years to get the pro. So you guys weren't there yet. So 90% purchase. Did you use their rehab money also?
Yes.
Okay. And 100% of the rehab. Do you remember like around the terms that they gave you? Like, was it like a point and a half on the front? And do you remember?
12 and 2.
Maybe, okay.
Maybe 11 and a half and 2, something like that.
So 2 points, 11.5. Okay. So that's like 2% of the loan on the front end is what a point is. And then monthly interest, and there's interest only payments. And there's probably a couple fees, like they got like a transaction fee and like a appraisal fee and stuff like that. Okay. And then tell me about the private money. You raise like gap funding for this?
Yeah. Yeah. We had one family member and one friend looking to partner on a deal, and they each had a little bit of money. So we used that to cover some of the down payment and get started on the rehab, and then used personal money for the rest.
So some of your personal money was in there too.
Yep.
How much did the friends and family bring?
A total of 40,000.
40K. Okay. So what they're talking about on like starting the rehab is there's a draw process that hard money lenders use. So effectively, like, you have to put in like 10 or 15K of work and then put in a draw request to reimburse that. So even though they're putting 100% of the rehab money in, you have to put the money in up front. So what I used to do is I use a lot of credit cards before. So I'd buy like all the materials and look for like, if I have to do a roof, usually I would try to get started like with a roof or something like that, and find a company that was really good that would also take a credit card. And so I did that on my American Express Platinum, because when I was in the military, they gave, like, I didn't have to pay the 495 fee or whatever for the Platinum card, and it has no limit. So I could put like whatever on there. So I did that for a while. And there's like 0% interest credit cards. Like, I set that up with Home Depot. Sometimes you get a net 30 with some of these folks, things like that, that I would try to do when I didn't want to put a lot of my money in, just as tips for people that are listening. Okay. So started that rehab, private money. And then, how did you find, like, tell me about the contractor. What did any problems come up on the purchase, on the hard money loan, finding contractors, any of that stuff? Was it pretty smooth?
Nothing on the purchase. This particular owner had a 2 week,
hold back
post possession. So he wasn't quite out in 2 weeks.
Okay. So you bought the house and you let him stay in there for 2 weeks before he got out.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
It was part of the agreement to purchase it. So we agreed to.
But he wanted to stay in there. Why did he want to do that?
He needed the money to find another living arrangement. He was behind on the mortgage. I think it was an ex, his wife that had passed, left the house. He couldn't make payments. It was getting into some situation like that, that he couldn't afford to keep up with it.
I think he just needed the money to purchase something else is what I really think.
And, yeah. So a lot of times this happens. I've done this so many times. So how did you guys protect yourself if he wasn't out in 2 weeks?
Title held money at closing that if you,
how much?
So,
15,000.
Yeah. I think it was, 15,000.
Whose idea was that?
That was part of the contract with the wholesaler. And he wasn't out.
The wholesaler negotiated that already. You walked into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I'm glad they did that because a really good wholesaler will know how to do that. A bad one won't. And the big risk that you have, just for anybody out there who's doing this and let somebody stay, is it's their house, right? You just bought it. They're still in the house. And you would think, I own the house, so I'm just going to evict them. Well, a court is not going to look at it like an eviction. It's going to look at it like an ejection, which is really hard for a judge to kick somebody out. In Florida, it might happen. In Texas, it might happen. It's definitely not happening in California, New York, Kentucky probably, I hate to put the colors on there, but a little bit more of the blue states. So there are certain states that it's just not really going to fly at all. And even in Florida, it might be hard to get him out. And he could stay there for a long period of time and just sit there and not move the stuff out, and you're stuck. Now you're paying the hard money loans. You own the property. Your taxes, your insurance, all that stuff is happening. So there's a couple things that I would do. Number one, I would tell your insurance company that this is happening. So when you put insurance on it, there's somebody living in the house. It's not a builder's risk policy where there's nobody in there where it's vacant. So you have to be careful with that. If the guy lights the house on fire in those 2 weeks and you have a builder's risk policy, you could be in big trouble because there's not supposed to be somebody living in there. So something to think about for a flipper that buys something like this where they stay in there for a few weeks. The other one is what they did, which is called an escrow holdback. So it's actually holding money in escrow that this person is motivated to get out. And you could actually build in penalties if they're not out in time. So if the guy goes, like maybe you hold back 25,000, and I try to hold back enough money where it's painful for them not to get it. Not like, let's hold back 5K because that'll pay for and to get that money is a challenge too, just because it's an escrow. Now, what I try to do is I say, all right, you're in there for 2 weeks. That's cool. I'll hold back 25K. If you stay an extra week, now I get 5K. You stay an extra week, another 5K comes to me. So I'm forcing them out with painful payments that are all documented in the contract that they sign and notarize. So like that, because those things are what I'm going to take. I'm going to have to go to court potentially to get my money because the title company may not release it in escrow without permission. So there's like an escrow release form. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do to protect yourself. Talk to your title company, talk to your attorney, and think about that, especially the flippers. Like, this is a great tool that you have in your tool belt as a flipper or a wholesaler to allow people to stay, to give them, because a realtor is not going to be able to do that typically. Sometimes they might. Homeowner wants to move in right away. They're not letting the homeowner hold back or stay back. And so all that stuff is some tips that I have for this. I'm glad it came up because I don't know that I've ever talked about that on the podcast either, is like escrow holdbacks, what it is and how to protect yourself. Because I just think through, like, we're doing all these simulations with you guys. I did one with you guys. It's like, let's think through the problems that could come up. What happens if it catches on fire? What happens if the house floods with the person? What if the dude like runs his toilet and passes out and there's water in the whole house? What happens if he stays an extra 2 weeks? What happens if he never wants to get out? What happens if, I don't know, he doesn't find a place and it's just ticking, ticking, ticking. So I think through all of that stuff and protect myself up front. So
yeah, you brought up a good point. I want to add to that is get it all in writing. Cause we had a case where he wasn't out in 2 weeks and we started talking to title and he was telling title that we told him he could stay when we didn't make these agreements. And so title said, well, now we can't do anything with the money because you guys are differing. And it eventually worked out. He got out. We agreed on, we didn't keep all of his money, but had we kept paper trail, that would have been a lot easier to get our money back from title. So always keep that stuff in writing if you're negotiating that, even after the close.
Yeah. Title is very much like they don't want to, they're like, oh, you're saying this and this person's saying this. Well, our hands are tied. We can't do anything. The money's going to sit here until you guys agree. And you both sign this form, including an escrow release, including all that stuff. Like, it's very much, you think, oh, it's okay. It's in escrow. Like, I'll be able to get it. No. Even if it's written in the contract and you disagree, you're probably going to have to go to mediation and go to court to try to get it. So just think about all that stuff ahead of time. So cool. Okay. We went off track a little bit, but I think it was valuable. I think this is like, this is probably one of the biggest learning lessons that we could potentially teach. So 215. Okay. So you got the contractor in there. How did the rehab go? Like, you had a $60,000 budget. How did you do on the budget?
The rehab itself went, I mean, pretty well, as far as just the work to get done. It wasn't up until the end when we went to sell it that we had actually had more problems come up.
Okay. Budget 60K. Did you hit it?
Not until we went to sell it.
We were close until our first home inspection.
Yeah.
Okay. Then- so you do the rehab, you get it fixed up. You're about 60K, like over or close to it. You were close to 60K.
Yeah, I think maybe we were a little over 60, maybe 63, 64. Part of this too was that through this process, I think we were learning that we could sell it for more than what we thought. So we did added a few more things that, you know, weren't absolutely necessary, but maybe would help sell it or bring more value to the property, you know, adding a fence or just some random things that we added along the way. So
who is the detail person in this relationship here?
Depends on the detail.
It depends.
Yeah. Like, I'm detailed with design, and then he's more detailed with some of the
all the administration, the bills and the books and making sure money is where it should be. And
wanting to know every problem that could possibly happen that you were just talking about, that's him, you know, thinking through all that. And I'm like, oh, that just stresses me out. Like,
Tiffany's the gas and Nick is the brake.
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. I'm the yes, he's the no.
Got it. So, Nick, do you know how much you spent in rehab up until the listing it?
Yeah. I mean, we did at the time, cause we keep track of it. Yeah. We didn't look at that point in time to like when we prepped for this.
You're going to tell me the actual cost because something big happened. Okay. So you listed the property. How much did you list it for? You were planning on the ARV to be in 365, got it all fixed up. What did you list it for?
409.
Yeah. Okay. What happened from 365 to 409?
Just some houses in the area, in the neighborhood, were selling higher and even higher than that. And So, I mean, it sounds kind of crazy that we were that far off in our ARV. I will say that the wholesaler, when he, in the beginning, they had the ARV at like 380, 385. And I was getting some different comps, and maybe that helped me also get a lower price when I purchased it. However, yes, we listed it for 409.
Wow, cool. So 409, did you get a realtor to list it? Are you guys realtors? Would a realtor list it?
I actually became an agent during that time.
And then you listed it?
It was my first listing and I listed it. So we listed it, and 409, and we had actually like three offers over asking that weekend.
Okay. Three offers over asking. How fast? Like, real fast?
The day listed.
The day.
And gosh. Okay. Wow. Okay. What, like, how much? What were the offers?
420.
420 was the highest. We had like 410 and something. Yeah.
Good gosh. Okay. 420. I feel like this is in 2023. I feel like we're in 2021. Okay. So, 420,000. Is that the one you took?
Yes. Well,
yes, we did. That was the first buyer who looked at it. We did take that one. Yes.
Okay. And then what happened? You keep saying, well, and well, there's obviously like something that happened here. So.
Well, we had another agent that their buyers really wanted it. And so she insisted on putting in a backup offer, and hers was like $1,000 under the one we accepted. So we signed the backup offer. And then on our home inspection, the tub drain had an issue. It backed up into the toilet, flooded the bathroom, water got in the kitchen.
Sewage was coming up out of the toilet because it clogged the shower.
This is during the home inspection?
Yes. During the home inspection.
Wait a second. The home inspector is there doing this?
Yeah.
And caused this problem? Like when they fill the tub up?
Yeah, he filled the shower. This was a shower.
He filled the shower.
He turned the water on. It must not, like, obviously we weren't there. The shower wasn't draining. And then something happened. Now the toilet started overflowing. He grabs the stager's towels and uses it to wipe up the sewage coming out of the toilet. So needless to say, those buyers backed out.
They didn't even give us a chance to fix. Yeah. They just canceled.
So, but like, did this damage any of the work that you did, or was it just, he contained it all? It was just a sewage. Okay.
It was contained.
It was contained.
I was like, I would have been pissed if like it overflowed and he like flooded my hardwood floors and everything. I'd have been like, no, dude, we're using your liability insurance for this.
But luckily, no, we did have to take out tile out of a new shower, redo a shower pan because the cast iron drain didn't get replaced and it cracked and fell apart. And so there were some extra rehab costs to fix that.
Yeah. So there was there was something clogged in the drain, but what happened, we come to find out that the contractor did not replace the shower pan liner. I mean, and this is a house from the 70s. So it was probably the old shower, if they even did that back then. So he never put a new shower pan liner in there. So through that, we also found out that we had to then redo the tile on the bottom of the shower and like the first three tiles that went around. So more rehab to do after.
So what was the time and cost of that?
Was it probably a couple weeks, and also at least $1,500 to $2,000, I would say.
That's not that bad.
No,
fix that.
We turned
not
it
that
around.
Bad when you're taking a $420,000 offer when you thought the ARV was $365.
Right. So yeah, like, and then because we had that backup offer, I told them what happened with the, she was like, they were fine with it, and they became our backup offer. So
okay, so the backup offer at 419.
So I think we may have said that wrong. I feel like we were at 421 maybe with those first buyers because they had the escalation clause.
Okay.
And then the backup offer came, I think it was 420.
Something like that.
Okay. So 420K. Cool. So 420K, the backup offer came in. You guys fixed the tile, maybe like weeks in 2000. And then how'd the closing go? Smooth from then on?
No, then we had a hurricane. So
a near hurricane, you know, last year, right? Because it didn't exactly hit us. So what was...
But we still ended up spending a little over a thousand. We had to board up windows and buy plywood.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had put a new roof on this house, and a part of the flat roof leaked. And this was a couple days before closing. Long story short, we couldn't get the roofing contractor to own it. So we paid $5,000 to have a different roofer fix it in time for closing. So we ate another $5,000 on rehab to fix that.
Well, and part of that too is that, you know, here we are like ready to close. We had fixed the roof again. So we fixed the roof because the inspector didn't like it. Even though it passed a city inspection, the home inspector didn't like it. And we're getting ready to close. Well, then the hurricane comes through. And because of the hurricane coming through, the lender now requires, obviously, the buyer to go back in and say nothing was a damage or whatever. And then again, we had the roof leak again. So the roof in that section was literally replaced three times, right? Because the first time, they fixed it the second time, and then they literally had to replace it the third time. So this is all happening while we're under contract to sell it.
So are we at like 70K in rehab at the end of all this?
Yeah, I think we're like 72 is what we ended up.
72K. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if everybody else listening is like, we're playing this little fiddle for you, like $1,000 and $2,000. And I know in the moment you're like, oh, this is like crushing me. But like, you're like $55,000 over your original ARV. I'm like, all right, I'd just be like, I'll fix anything. Just give me my money.
We kind of did.
That was kind of, yeah. I mean, if the circumstances were different, we probably wouldn't have, but because of knowing what we already had the offer for, we already had it under contract for that. It was just kind of like, we need to get this done and we want to be done.
And did you take a commission for this, or did you just take your, pay your broker? Or how'd you do it?
Yeah, I took a commission.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So $215,000 purchase, $215,000, $72,000 rehab. That's $287,000. Okay. You have closing costs on the front. You have closing costs on the back. What'd you guys make? Like, you make like $100,000?
We also did a $5,000
concession?
We did a $5,000 concession.
For their closing costs or something?
Other nitpicky things they wanted fixed that we didn't deal with. So we just said here.
They wanted $15,000 to fix stuff and we said five.
We talked about that on the last podcast. It was a lot of times it's like, I'm not fixing all this stuff. It's going to delay months. And some of the things they think is really expensive, it's actually really cheap to do. So I usually do that and then vice versa. Okay. So, all right. What'd you make on this? Like $90,000 then? Net?
76.
76. Man, so 287. So, okay, for all the people that watch HGTV, $215,000 purchase price, $72,000 rehab, $5,000 of concessions, $420,000 purchase price. So you can see the delta of this is $128,000. That's what they show on HGTV at the end of what the flippers make. And somehow $128,000 became, what did you say? 76,000?
Six. Yep.
There's $52,000 that disappeared somewhere. So from the HGTV price to the Nick and Tiffany price, $52,000 goes away. So that's, what is that? That's purchase price costs on the front end. That's holding costs, so insurance, utilities, taxes, hard money costs, interest, points, inspection fees, draw fees along the way, interest to the private money lenders, and then sale fees, sale on the back end. You got mortgage doc stamps, you got title work, you've got all kinds of stuff that comes. The realtor fees. Realtors seem to be so expensive. Tiffany, you're so expensive. That doesn't include you giving back your money from the realtor fees. So what'd you make on that? Like $10,000?
Yeah.
Yep.
Around that, yeah.
After the broker's cost or something. So you're more like $86,000, which sounds about right. I was like $90,000 if I didn't pay a realtor or reduce that cost. But okay, $76,000, $52,000 just disappears. And I don't want to like freak anybody out. Of like, oh, well, like everybody else gets paid and I don't. I mean, $76,000 is pretty good. However, if you sold it for $365 instead of $420, let's see, that's, you probably only would have only made $30,000. Mm-hmm. Maybe $35,000. Yeah. So time is definitely in your favor. If you guys went faster, you'd make more than $76,000. You like cost creep and budget stuff like that on the rehab costs helps. And then your money costs, if you get the money costs down, that can help too. Throw another $5,000 or $10,000 in your pocket if you can get those costs down on the money. Raise all the private money at like 8% instead of 2 points and 11.5% with a bunch of fees. That can help too. So cool. Hopefully this demystifies some of the like ins and outs of this. You see the HGTV and you're like, $128,000. Geez, I should do this. That's my entire salary. And then it gets cut in half.
Exactly. So,
what were some of the biggest lessons learned that you guys had from this? And then what are you doing with that now that you're doing like your next few projects?
I mean, gosh, I feel like, everything we learned so much from every project. I mean, we were talking about this as a we say numbers, like this one, we were able to not be so strict on our numbers. Our next flip, really, we did not make as much money. And so from that one, we really had to learn our numbers better. And like, because taxes are different here. He probably can explain or say different, but we learned that, you pay them. Is it
when they're paid in arrears and you hold it into the new year, you're now responsible for all of last year's, even though you get that small prorated from the seller, right? So that can be penalizing, especially when you bought it really cheap and you sell it for a lot more. So that you've got to anticipate, and just closing costs, selling fees, the transfer taxes and the deeds is in Florida, it's expensive. So you got to know your numbers, because we have wholesalers pitch us deals and they look at the numbers like, here's your purchase, rehab, and your ARV. And they think there's all this spread because they don't understand the money costs and how much it costs, especially when you're paying the seller's closing costs also. They don't realize how much that eats in. So you really have to know your numbers on the, like at the title side, what you're doing when you're signing papers.
Yeah. And
so what you mean by the taxes is the new assessment each year that happens. And when the new assessment goes up, it can adjust your taxes up significantly higher. Is that what you mean?
Well, here, because it's changed, it changes hands. So when we bought the one after we bought this particular one, that they were paying like $500 a year in taxes. Well, when we purchased it, it went up like 300%. So now the taxes were $3,000. So we had to back pay those when it changed ownership. So those are something we didn't account for.
So new assessment, because they were probably homesteaded. They may have been seniors. So there's all kinds of different tax loopholes in Florida, depending on how it's set up. So you could pay very little tax, especially if you're disabled. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. So that when it changes hands, it's no longer homesteaded and it pops up higher and that all that stuff gets removed. So you definitely have to think about that and run those numbers. The other thing I just wanted to mention, if they do a reassessment of taxes, you could petition for them to look at it again and reassess it and drop the tax rate. That's possible, especially if it's a really expensive property. We've done that in the past on some of our projects when it was like, this is ridiculous. You just doubled our tax rate. You mentioned something else. A lot of the fees and costs. So when you do more projects, my recommendation to you is, especially you guys, if you're doing a lot of projects in one area, you get to a point where you start normalizing the numbers. So like when you look at them, if you see that, you know, your holding costs are around 8% of the ARV, you figure out a way. Like I remember sitting down in our very first seven-figure flipping event, like very early on in the mastermind, first ever group. I sat down with a guy who was in New York and I was like, look, just show me all your projects. Show me, like, cause they have very high costs there on the front end, the back end. He's like, the 70% rule does not work for me. And I was like, all right, let's figure out your rule. And so we looked at all, he had like 15 projects probably. We looked at them all. I put them all in Excel spreadsheet. I normalized all of his holding costs and they all came out to a plus or minus 1% of his ARV. And I said, dude, this is it. Like it's here. It's obvious. You can take it. And then every time you could do back of the envelope math to say that 10% of your ARV is going to go to holding costs. And at least then you can get really close on your offer out of the gate and then dial it in and perfect it. So as you guys do more, I highly recommend you do that, where you can just like input everything and start. So this is probably for Nick, not Tiffany. Input it into a spreadsheet in some order and just watch them all. And I bet they normalize over time at a specific percentage so that you can get a really close estimate where you're not. And that's how you can make a ton of offers with pretty high fidelity, like 90% confidence that your numbers are going to be close every time, or you can have a VA just run the numbers for you. With maybe all you do is the ARV and let them do all the rest of the math and make the offers. So that's something that I did for a long time that worked really well for me. What of the Runway group would you say helped you during this transaction? Like, is there something that you used or something that was helpful to you guys during all this?
Definitely the coaching calls. for sure. And the accountability groups. Mm. So both of them.
So like, what about the coaching calls, like the one-to-one calls?
Yeah. The one-to-one calls. I mean, especially in that first flip, I mean, there were just days that it was like, I just need to get through this day. I just need to get through this day. And then I would have a coaching call and they were, you know, it was like, they would help me through those next steps. So what do I need to do now? Like, or what I need to do next, or the next three steps I need to do. And I think the accountability groups, like, you know, they're almost like our group therapy, because we come together and we're like, oh, you're having that problem too. Oh, with your contractor, it's just like, you're not abnormal for all the things you're dealing with as a flipper. And you get to learn from other people what they're doing to fix the problem that you have. So you just learn a lot from other people as well.
Yeah. Cool. All right. What's next for you guys? And what, like, we have an audience, a lot of people that listen to the show. How can we help you?
Well, I mean, right now we actually are working on, we have four flips. We have four flips right now. We are closing on one tomorrow. And so I don't know, prayer.
Yeah.
I guess it's like,
we can do that.
It's a whole different level of stress and learning new things that now you have multiple going. It's not just one thing happening at one flip. It's now three things happening at three different flips. So, that sort of thing. I mean, I have to say we're always looking for deals,
where do you want deals?
We're mostly in Pinellas County, but that's the Tampa Bay area. So we're looking for deals there, of course, partnering, private money or possibly JVing. So that for sure. And I mean, I'm all looking for contractors that show up.
Okay. So if you're a contractor in the Pinellas area that shows up, that can get things done on time and actually changes the shower pan when you ask to change the shower pan, when you build somebody to change the shower pan, then reach out to Nick and Tiffany. How can they get a hold of you if you have deals in Pinellas County or money, like how should they reach out to you guys?
I'll give my phone number. I would give my phone number out. It's 623-203-1976. And then on, we're Resident Revival on Facebook and Resi Revival on Instagram.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, I had a great time talking with you guys. If you're listening and you're interested in getting on some one-to-one coaching calls or being involved in an accountability group or coming to some of our events, you can go to 7figurerunway.com. It's the number 7figurerunway.com. And if you're more advanced, like you're flipping 10 houses or more a year, wholesaling 10 houses or more a year, you're starting to scale, you want to hire some people, you want to get out of the day-to-day, then our altitude group is probably better for you. But just go ahead and fill out an application there at 7figurerunway and jump on a quick call with my staff, and we'll just kind of talk about where you are and where you want to be and see if we can help. And maybe the book that Nick and Tiffany didn't read or the podcast that they're on right now is better for you. So maybe you can stay there and just kind of start there and see how you go. So we're doing some really cool stuff coming up that I'm excited about. Like next week, Adam Whitney and I are doing a challenge for 2 hours a day for 5 days to really just dive in and drive traffic and leads and just show the back inner workings of our business and get on the phone and talk to some sellers and just remove the mystical side of what this is and just show you how easy it is to pull a list, how easy it is to skip trace somebody, how easy it is to pick up the phone and have a conversation with them and just have a lot of fun. So if you're listening to this, it's probably past, but we're going to take it and do some replays and run it every few months. So I'm excited about that. So it might be something that's available then, but if you go to 7figurerunway.com, you can check all of that out, fill out an application and just talk to us. You can respond to the email. You can comment here. You can, you know, tag me on social media or whatever you need to do to get a hold of us. And we'll be there for you if we can. So Nick and Tiffany, thanks for being here. I totally forgot how to pronounce your last name again. So we're just going to go to Nick and Tiffany, and it begins with a W and has a Y and a few lots of other letters in there. So give it to me one more time.
Winner Rodnick.
Winner Rodnick. Okay. I got it. How Now Brown Cow. All right. Great show. I had such a good time talking to you guys. I think that we uncovered like some really cool tips and tactics here. Escrow holdbacks was incredible. A lot of the holding costs and demystifying kind of some of the 128,000 versus 76,000. By the way, congratulations. You made $76,000 plus a commission of like 10K. That is awesome. That's like a whole year's work for the average, more than the average American, like the average household. So really incredible. Don't forget that. And sometimes it's hard to see how far we've come when we're just looking forward. So it's really awesome. Like incredible deal. I don't think I've ever made that much on a flip myself. So awesome job. That's incredible. Keep doing it. And I'll see you guys on the next podcast. Bye.
All righty, Bill. Thank you.